Buglers, we are live from Leicester Square Theatre on the 16th of September with Chris Addison and Alice Fraser. It might be our only London date of the year, so get your tickets now. Oh, get them at thebuglepodcast.com. That bit's important.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weight loss. That's PlushCare.com/weight loss. PlushCare.com/weight loss.
Hello and welcome to Catharsis, the show where I provide therapy for my guests. A chance to talk about old grudges, petty grudges, unpopular opinions and other people's problems. Get it off your chest and into my earlobes. This week I am joined by comedian, writer and host of The Mash Report, Rachel Paris.
Hello.
Hello, Rachel. However, before we get into your gripes, let's get a quick one of mine out of the way. This is my annoyance this week. Let's do it as a letter. Dear anyone in the US writing Cockney characters for TV and films, we do not say twat. For the love of God, please make it stop. If you must throw in a twat, like, or a right fucking Herbert, or an absolute toilet, or a shithouse, twat makes your character come off like 100 mile an hour. I always wonder if the actor in question says, oh, I don't think a British person would ever say that. Or does everyone just go, it's fine. Like, I know for that example that I'm talking about, I think there's an Antipodean playing Cockney, so they might not know, but I just feel like the other week an English person in Emily in Paris said sidewalk, and I was like, he's not saying sidewalk, he's saying pavement, rue, or at a stretch, boulevard, maybe. But it's such a small thing, but it really takes me out of it. It makes me suddenly aware that I'm not watching that character. How do you feel about it, Rachel?
Well, you talking about that, like, there's the words that you wouldn't use. And then it reminded me of another thing that irritates me. And I'm glad you've asked, because the other question, I couldn't fit it in elsewhere in the show, is bad accents in TV and film and on stage. That would be all right if it wasn't for the fact that they've been allowed to do such a bad accent because of a fear of asking the talent, in inverted commas, to do their job. Like, you just get the impression you're watching someone, like, you know, the Boys.
Well, that's the twat reference.
Oh, is it? Right.
Yes.
So, you know, Carl Urban in that has got, like, an outrageously bad
Cockney accent.
That's so bad. And I just feel like, and it hasn't really improved enough over the series. So no one has gone to him, we can't start filming until you do better. Like, you have to have multiple accent coaches. And when that happens, you're like, I just get the impression no one's said to, like, they're scared to ask things of them. No one said, like, this isn't good enough. Like, you haven't yet fulfilled your contract. You've got to learn to do this accent, because of this attitude of, like, you can't ask things once someone reaches a certain level. And I hate that whole attitude. It drives me crazy.
And is it part of the audition process? Is it like a must for this character, or did they see him and go, I think he would be great doing that, because the performance is great, but the accent is shocking. So how do we, so they either go, what, I don't, why don't we just make the character Australian? He might not be not Australian. He's from New Zealand, isn't he?
Yeah, I think he might be. And that'd be fine. Like, I know it's not exactly the same, but that'd be okay.
Yeah. I've watched some of the Hard Men in Australian and Kiwi kind of thing. So he could do a version of that. Or what fascinates me is that, so you haven't got a British actor playing the part. That's fine. But you also haven't got someone from the UK, like, consulting on the script. Because twat is just not a word. We just don't twat We twat about, we don't twat. And I think Jason Statham says it in Spy, and I'm like, what's happening?
Why are you consenting to say that word, Jason Statham? You're genuinely like, white boy British. What are you asking?
Yeah, it's baffling to me. I've never understood it. And I wonder if when production starts, it's too late. She says, I mean, I did an American accent on something and I was so conscious of always like trying to be on it. And I would do it in the makeup chair. I'd just sit down and do the voice because I was like, I'm so afraid of slipping up. And I just know if I've warmed up and been in it for like a couple of hours before, then I've got a much better chance of. But I had an accent coach and stuff like that as well. So I feel like don't be afraid to say that is the job. The job is, can you do the accent? If the job is, can you do the accent? You've got to do the accent.
Like, decide how important it is to you. If they can't, if you really want that person and they can't do the accent, then don't make them do the accent. And if the role relies on the accent, then don't cast that person. I also get it with like, you know, I don't know if locational is a word, but like locational programs like Peaky Blinders and Sherwood, like the BBC thing about the Nottingham miners' strikes. And because I'm East Midlands, I was absolutely on the lookout for, because East Midlands accents remain, I think, like one of the rarer ones to get right on TV. And in both Peaky Blinders, initially they had people doing like Liverpool accents and general Yorkshire, and in Sherwood as well, like the main characters, you got over it in time, but like the main characters who it says in the script they're Nottingham born and bred, doing like broad Yorkshire accents, which are nothing like the Nottingham accent at all. Honestly, I was really enjoying this really incredibly high quality award-winning drama, but just every so often I'd turn to my husband and just say the sentence they'd said but in a Nottingham accent. Like, this is what it should be.
And this is how it should sound.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for agreeing with my beef. Let's get straight into one of yours. The first section of the podcast we call Old Grudges.
Yeah.
And this is something from the past that you either wish you'd handled differently or said something, or that you still hold a little bit of resentment for.
So I used to work in arts administration, the day job. And one of the jobs was at the Barbican, doing like music concert planning and stuff like that in their admin department. And one of the guys there, when I left, so I worked there probably about 6 months, and it was lovely. And the lady who was my boss, Fran, was so nice. And all that time I was like doing comedy, you know, and teaching as well afterwards. So like doing a bit of piano teaching after work, and then I go and do comedy at night. So it was a busy time. It's when I was just starting my comedy career, and I've been doing comedy, I reckon, by that point, maybe a year and a half. And I was leaving. I resigned from this arts admin job to try and I'd found a part-time job so that I could do comedy easier. And I made the mistake of saying that's why I was leaving. And there was this particular guy who was really arch and sarcastic, who worked in my department, who was like just really sarcastic about it when I left, like really like, oh, you're going to do comedy. Okay, good luck.
I don't like, find you funny, translated.
Yeah. And I'm not funny at work. Like, I wasn't funny at work at all, but like, he was just so mean about it. But I kind of got a little bit of revenge already, because I don't even know if he knows this, so maybe I didn't, but I went 1 year later. Do you remember the I was in the Hackney Empire New Act of the Year.
Oh yes, I remember that, yeah.
But it got held at the Barbican.
Oh wow.
So it was quite nice. I emailed my boss hoping that she would pass it on to him to say like, it is working out okay. Like, it wasn't a horrendous mistake to
leave.
People like that, like I encountered a lot of that, like when it's like impossible to believe that someone who has got a normal job is also capable of doing another thing. Just the sarcasm involved, the skepticism is horrible.
I think it's often people who are afraid to go for their dream.
Yeah.
So I wonder if there's a small part of him that was like, I think I'm quite funny. And then all of a sudden it's just such a threat to have, you know, and the low grade sexism within it as well, of kind of going, oh, there's this woman in my office. I don't think she's funny. What does she mean she's doing? Oh, she's doing well enough to leave the job and I'm still here. Like, I really wonder if that was his underlying... What did he do at the... Oh, you, I suppose you can't say, because that might be a bit too...
Well, I can say he was senior kind of booker at the Barbican. Right. So he had, like, a good job. It was kind of... it was creative and, you know, he really curated a lot of the things at the Barbican. So I think he felt like, oh, you're saying no to working where I've chosen to work. Or he just couldn't believe that this young girl, like, also did comedy. I don't know.
Is taking that as a personal slight of someone going, oh, I'm moving on, is like it's put him into a tailspin of going, well, if this is good enough for me, why isn't it good enough for you?
Or
why should you think there's anything outside of this? Which is wild. We often get people saying stuff that's happened at work. I guess because work is one of the places that you can't choose your colleagues.
Yeah.
And you are forced to see them every day and then just sort of get on with them.
Yeah.
I remember when I was my first job leaving school, I had to like swallow down. I had a woman who, and it was a woman.
That you didn't finish that sentence.
Everyone's like, do we need to get some kind of sexual harassment?
I guess that job, my God.
Swallow down comments. And actually, it was a woman. Yeah. It was a woman who worked there who every day would like be like just sort of pass remarkable on the length of my skirt. Like it was a personal affront to her. And I was like, can I tell you, how old was I when I started working there? 17, 18, so that she had a real... And then one day I got hauled into HR and the HR director was a woman and she was like, I think it's a real issue with the length of your skirts. And I had like a knee-length skirt on that day.
What the hell?
Like, yeah, yeah.
You're living in Victorian times. What?
I think I was just young and just kind of like, you know, I was working in the post room. So I was just, I think I was just young and just a bit giddy. But they were like, this young... hot woman, how do we make her less hot and annoying for us? So I was like, who's, you know, I know there was one woman who was always complaining, but I just didn't understand, you know, whether why it would affect her what I was wearing in any way, shape or form.
It's true, isn't it, that if you were an older you know, not a hot young girl, but like an older woman, I suspect they wouldn't probably have the temerity, but also perhaps the cause to haul you in and say you can't wear a knee-length skirt, a slightly above the knee skirt.
Yeah, yeah. And it wasn't even, I guess there would be the thing of like, if I was being objectified to then go and say the men are being a bit gross around this girl. But there's a kind of victim blaming in that of kind of going, well, she shouldn't be, you know, I wasn't turning up in hot pants. No. I was wearing suits and like summer dress, like I would wear like a floral dress with like a, it was the 90s. So it was, you know, it was the late 90s. So that fashion was, it was like a lime coloured blazer and a floral dress and mules or a skirt suit.
Yeah.
You know.
I do remember actually, this is a weird one, but actually a play that I did that was improvised. One of the cast members who was a young woman got told by the director, who was a sort of older man, that she was too casually dressed. And it wasn't provocative. It was like, you're too scruffy, which I don't know. I don't know that it was, I don't think it was sexism, but it was odd. It was, we were all like, what? It's a, like we were the improv like roles that we were playing were like young people kind of living their lives kind of thing. You kind of, and obviously lots of different characters because it was improvised. So it was, that was a really strange one. It was the first time I think I'd encountered really kind of since school being told what to wear, like in real life.
An enforcement of a dress code.
Yeah. In a sort of really surprising and slightly vague way, she was like, oh, I'm, I don't know what to wear. I think I look fine.
Well, I wonder if your boss, your old boss at the Barbican, sees you now on TV with your award nominations and a book.
I doubt it. I bet he doesn't remember. He probably doesn't remember. I bet he doesn't connect like that girl with me, I would think.
I think there's a thing of sometimes being casually dismissive and cruel that the person saying it just has no memory because they say stuff like that all the time, but yeah. how much that can drive a person on to success. Thank you for being my fuel is probably yeah. what we should say.
Yeah, to be fair.
Thank you for sharing.
No problem.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
The next section we call topical cream. We like to encourage our guests to bring a topical news story. Now, it doesn't have to be like topical in the last week. It could just be something that's being discussed at the moment in the zeitgeist or a thing that annoys you. So hit me up.
My topical complaint is very topical. It's hot right now. Is the childcare situation in the UK, which is very topical because all of the charities, you know, for parenthood are currently protesting, led by Pregnant Then Screwed, about the fact that childcare is so expensive that you can go to work and make a loss.
Right. It's all just gone up again, hasn't it? A lot of the fees have gone yeah. up for places.
Exactly. Yeah. So it's all blowing up now. And I think that a lot of action is being taken. I'm definitely like already, and I haven't hit key childcare time yet. I'm just at toddler age, but like already, as in, no, I haven't got hit nursery fees yet.
Yes.
But like yeah. scrambling between childminders and stuff. But like already I'm doing most gigs making a loss once you count in a babysitter. So it is absurd. And it's so, even though marriage is more equal than it used to be and it's not always a hetero partnership, it still impacts women statistically much more, and so it impacts women in the workforce and has this knock-on effect, you know, in terms of representation. So there's that. Haven't found the humour in it yet. I'll try to.
I think stop bringing your kids to work day. I think people are going to start doing something once everyone starts turning up going, oh, actually, I can't afford to come into do my work and get a childminder or take the kid to nursery. So they're just going to be here.
Yeah. But my friends told me about, like, they've got a gym near them that has a free, so it's not a workplace, but has a free creche. So you can just turn up and bring your kid, do your workout and leave again. But I feel like surely there's something in that, how difficult it would be to provide, depending on the size of the company and the size of the building, like some kind of like...
Some companies do have creches, and I think that's right? not a bad idea as well, because it does mean that you can kind of check in
yeah.
at lunchtime with your kid, or you can be, you know... I think some hospitals and stuff have that sort of facility available for people, just because, you know, if people are on call or working crazy hours, how are you going to... I mean, like with our jobs, you know, it's feast or famine. You never know.
Yeah.
A friend of mine did a filming job recently. Here's an example. And again, this isn't funny, but she had to go to Ireland to do a filming job. And she was like, oh, I've got to find someone for my daughter. She's like 2 or 3 at the time. And she was like, it was like £300 a day, I think, because of the filming hours. And then it's about finding someone that you trust enough to...
Oh, yeah, exactly.
And then the production go, we'll give a part of it, but we're not paying for all of it. And then that's when women then get, which is the Pregnant and Screwed, exactly what they're campaigning against, where they go, well, we'll just hire someone who's not a mum because yeah. we don't want to pay this extra cost.
Exactly.
Yeah. On the production. And then that, also the trickle down for that is, and this is, again, where it gets like even more difficult, is they will provide those accommodations sometimes within our career if someone is a huge star.
Yeah.
They're like, of course, we're going to make sure that can happen for you. But if they're doing it for them, it means all of the smaller stuff down the line, people are less likely to, you know, so women who've had babies who are like, oh, I work and I'm, you know, but perhaps not the marquee name.
Yeah. But I was telling you in the dressing room the other day, wasn't I?
Yes.
A gig, yeah. Like that, you know, even when you feel like not a big name star, but that you reached a point where you can ask for basic human things like, I gave birth 4 weeks ago, I'm bringing my newborn baby in because I've got no choice because that's when you're filming. Can I have a room with some heating and any food or tap water all day? And they're not providing that, and you have to beg for heat because the room that your 4-week-old baby's in is freezing. Like,
yes,
these things still not provided. And you ask, and I ask for them in advance, but and what happens generally, someone in the huge industry team of like 100 people goes, yes, of course, obviously, and they mean it. They go, yeah, of course we'll provide that, my god, yeah, of course we will, we'll be delighted to provide anything that you need. And then you arrive on the day and there's nothing. And that's, I think that's very common, that there's the message isn't passed down, it isn't valued as an important thing.
Yeah, and then that is why women feel devalued in the workplace. I hadn't even realized, I think, until Catherine Ryan mentioned it, maybe on her podcast, that, you know, why women stay silent about being pregnant for so long, because she was like, they don't want to take the risk on the insurance, so you just stop getting more work as a you know, as a pregnant, yeah, woman. You know, you're like in a situation where you're like, oh, I can't, it's just easier if we just get someone who's not pregnant. And absolutely, you'll never know about that conversation because no one is going to directly discriminate,
yeah,
in that way, because everyone would go, this is shocking. But actually, that's the kind of discrimination that happens behind closed doors. They're like, no, just give ourselves an easier time.
Yeah. Yeah. It's harder to spot, like, you know, in, I suppose, lots of different jobs, but particularly in our industry, because comedians are relatively interchangeable. You're just booking a lineup for a TV show or a gig. It's very easy to just, you don't need to disclose your reasons for going, oh, I'm going to book this person instead of this person. So it's really easy to do. Yeah, I saw that. That was really interesting, Catherine Ryan's post about lying about it and why you absolutely would. Of course you would.
Yeah. And even when you're like 8 months, like, in the room going, I'm going to stand behind a very high desk for this bit or have a bunch of flowers. You see them do it on TV shows where, in acting, where it can't be explained that the character, you know, it's, yeah, not in the storyline for the character to be pregnant.
What I find amazing, though, is how long it takes a lot of people to dare to suggest that you might be pregnant. I remember doing a radio show where I was the only woman in the room, as is so often the case, and there were five kind of older guys there, and I was 8.5 months pregnant, and I was big. I was big 8.5 months pregnant, like, and it was so obvious. I was wearing a dress where it was incredibly obvious, and I walked in, no one said anything, and I was like, all right, well, withhold your congratulations, why don't you? And then one of them, Fred McCauley, bless him, like, he was the only one, he went, oh, Rachel, congratulations, just in a really nice, normal way. And only then, because he'd popped the bubble, did they go, oh, I didn't want to guess. But, yeah, congratulations, that's lovely. I wasn't sure. And I'm like, oh, my God, like, you've seen, this isn't a normal show. Like, if I put on weight, it wouldn't be here. Like,
it wouldn't be coming from just underneath my
just
boobs.
Just there
to,
and nowhere else, yeah.
I had a very big meal, guys. That's what, yeah, happened, you know.
Just win.
In a way, it's kind of quite sweet, but it's also weird. It's also weird because you do want to congratulate. I think women feel less nervous, but maybe men have that slight thing of like, I don't want to get this wrong.
Yeah, of course.
Maybe you got to go in ankles first and go, have a look at this.
check these bad boys out. What do you make of that? Congratulate me on these incredibly thick ankles.
Time to move on to unpopular opinions. So this is something that you love that everyone else hates, or vice versa. Can be an item, an idea, a person, whatever you want.
The idea of don't feed the trolls. I think is nonsense, mostly, or at least it's not always true.
Don't leave the trolls hungry. Is that what you're saying?
Well, I think everyone who has been trolled online is very often told, just ignore them, just block them. It doesn't matter. It's just a handful of, you know, renegade guys in a base, which is not, these days is absolute nonsense. Like, trolling these days comes from completely public figures. No shame. There's no, sometimes it's anonymous. Sometimes it's not. Sometimes it's a boy in a basement. Sometimes it's a 75-year-old woman. Like, trolling is so universal, and ignoring it is not the solution it used to be. It was the solution when it was like, it was, you know, like 10 years ago, maybe 15 years, like it was a handful of people doing this, but it's so huge now. And it's often just people who are angry with you for disagreeing with them. Or I had an experience recently, like I just did a, literally this is all that happened. So, you know, Hannah Cooper, Joel Dommett's wife, she did a video talking on Instagram just saying, oh, I can't get on board with North, South, East, West. Like, I can't cope with North, South, East, West as directions. To me, like, North is just ahead.
Yes,
and
right.
It was funny.
She's
her and Joel obviously do a comedy podcast, and she was basing it on how she does feel, but obviously exaggerating it a bit for comic effect. And I literally commented underneath, as did many other women and men, completely agree with Hannah.
Yeah.
And I got, I think, nearly 800 replies.
What are these people doing?
From the mostly the US troll misogynist guys. And they started off just going, what are you talking about? Are you joking? And I was like, yes.
Yes. Yes. It's my job.
All comedians here. Someone put, oh, well, good luck to you when you find yourself in the Pacific Northwest. furious at the idea of someone ignoring directions. And then they became... you better not have children anytime soon. Like, using really nasty language and, oh, wow, like, just women, blondes and all of that. And I think you can ignore, but the point, I'm not saying responding helps. It can. I've had apologies on Twitter. If you respond in a useful way, you can get people to see another point of view. But that's a bit renegade. But I think the idea that it goes away if you ignore it is nonsense. Like, they just kept pouring in. I was on a list by that point, and hundreds every day, hundreds and hundreds. And you ignore them, it doesn't make any difference. So feed
like
them.
Like your name's come up on a board somewhere and gone,
that's
let's...
it. That definitely happened.
I think I did a live one on Instagram once, and they just started pouring in and like taking over the comments. And I was trying to chat to the audience watching the live, but they just all jumped on.
Yeah.
I always used to say I treat the comment section like I would the Portaloo at Glastonbury. Don't look down because it's just turd upon turd. So I think it's quite hard to find the diamond in amongst the... Because, you know, sometimes someone might have something that is nice and pleasurable and that you do want to engage with. I had to stop replying to people because my husband was like... I remember I was one Saturday night and I was arguing on Twitter, and my husband was like, it's like they're in the room with us. Just stop. Mm. And he's like, It's Saturday night. I want to relax. And I've got, you're getting upset and I'm getting upset because these people are being hurtful to you.
Yeah.
And that's what I try and do, is I'll try and reply if I have the time to engage and I can do something funny that I just kind of get a bit of a, or it's so egregious that I'm like, I'm going to have to, but the problem is, I suppose, is that once you do engage, then it's just kind of, and I've done it sometimes, especially on Instagram, it's just diminishing returns of, I've got it on some of my Men She Wrote videos where someone comes in and goes, women talk about men like this all the time. And I'm like, they don't. That's kind of why the satire works.
Yeah.
And then I'll get, you know, it's not funny though, is it? And then you get into this. What's always amazing to me is that, and it's always a man, that thinks his subjective opinion is somehow fact. And there's a confusion between going, this is not funny. And I'm like, you can say, I don't find it funny.
Yeah. Yeah.
But you can't say it objectively isn't when there's hundreds of thousands of people that have shared. Like, one of my clips, I was like, that's been shared 2 million times by people who find it funny.
Yeah.
So you saying it's not funny, but try to, and sometimes I do want to challenge those because I'm like, you do have to understand what you're saying, that what you're saying is incorrect.
Yeah. I only challenge the ones that I think there's a little ray of hope in something they're saying, that they might have a small element of reasonableness in them. But, and that's often the minority, but there's sometimes just something that I'm like, no, I think you genuinely, if I explain something that you have got wrong, you might. And occasionally, it has occasionally happened, but actually these guys on Instagram, to give you an example, what you're saying about like stating things as fact, they were putting stuff like that. I was like, this is not, it makes me want to reply territory, but I won't, was about, oh, you're so, it was all about how thick I was. It was like, you're so dumb. My God, these women, these blonde women, so dumb. Have you never, did you even pass school? Go to school, like learn some stuff. And I knew that if I'd like replied and gone anything about like, no, I've had a strong education, actually. Like, actually, that's not a thing people say about me, is that I'm undereducated. That would just, they'd just go in the opposite direction. They'd be like, oh, well, then the standards are slipping, or like, oh, I knew it. Like, it means nothing then. Your education means nothing.
There's no winning. There's no win. To be had.
You'd
to
never
be had.
Win. No.
I actually wrote a toxic bro playlist for Twitter, because one of the other ones that comes up a lot is Didn't Happen. That's on the Toxic Bro playlist.
Oh, Didn't Happen. Yes.
Didn't Happen. So I shared a story on there about a woman being womb bothered in Starbucks because they were refusing her coffee. And like I shared beat for beat, and it was like, didn't happen. This never happened. And there's a lot of that of like, this has never happened to me. Therefore, it's never happened to anyone ever.
Yeah.
You know, I've never given a woman an orgasm. Therefore... They don't.
It's often like
them.
Fully believable scenarios as well. It's not even out of the way scenarios that they're like, yeah, that didn't happen. It's like, yeah, it's very believable. This happens all the time.
Oh, here's mine. Track one, Let Me Explain Your Joke on the Toxic Bro playlist. Yeah. Two, You Ought to Seek My Approval. These are all just general troll points or
I've
repeated
got one.
Offense. Yeah, yeah.
One that I was getting a lot. Bear in mind, the comment I made, this recent one, was simply, I agree with you, Hannah. And the number of people who put, you're obsessed with yourself. you think you're so important. You think you, like that thing of like,
you
I've said
self, these self-obsessed celebrities,
self-obsessed,
these famous.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Another good one. This appears to be your area of expertise. Let me give my input. Mm. that's another track on the list. Well, thank you for sharing your unpopular opinion.
No props.
This is the section of the podcast we call Oryx, to mean prehistoric cattle, to mean old beef.
Nice.
Old beef. We touch upon a historic beef. Now, this week, the one I've picked for you, Rachel, is because I think that you might have a similar fascination around this topic as I do, as in fascinating and weird and kind of like the Kardashians of their era, which is the Mitford sisters. Specifically for this beef, I wanted to look at the fallout between Decca Mitford and Unity and Diana Mitford. So it's very much communist versus fascist. As it turns out, so the reason that I wanted to delve into this is because they've a lot of the Mitfords have written books, and then there was Nancy who wrote Pursuit of Love and Love in a Cold Climate and stuff, and Diana, who ended up being married to Oswald Mosley.
Oh, that one, yes,
yes, yeah. So, and the other sister, Unity Mitford, who basically sort of became close friends with Hitler, so would go over to Germany quite a lot. And when the outbreak of war happened, she actually shot herself. The bullet missed and sort of just mentally incapacitated herself.
Oh my God.
Like, but just kept saying Hitler said I had nice legs. One of the things that she could remember was that Hitler had, but she was fully on board. That's why when war broke out that she did it, and she was brought back to the UK to convalesce, you know. But Decca then I think married like a communist, would do etchings of hammer and sickle and stuff in the house.
Wow. They really didn't have a middle ground, did they?
No. No. It was one or the other. And then I think this was a was an ideological disagreement that they never got over. The reason I wanted to talk about it, I suppose, is like, are you a sibling, first of all?
Yes, I am. I'm the youngest of...
You're the youngest. I'm the youngest.
Several. Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. What is this? Of course we are. Of course we are.
We're the babies. We're the babies. But just the idea of being so ideologically opposed to someone in your family and how that sort of falls out. I wonder if it strengthens either side of the argument, whereas actually if it wasn't a member of your family, whether you'd be able to like kind of separate it. Like, and interestingly, these aren't the ones that are artistic, because a lot of the times when we're talking about these sort of arguments or debates, like it was Oasis versus Blur the other day, there's some kind of argument for the competitiveness increasing the art or making each other better. But this is wild.
Yeah, that is absolutely crazy. And I think it's interesting because I think the ideological differences happen very often between generations, like everyone's mum and dad is often a bit different ideologically.
Yes, yeah.
But for it to be between siblings, I think is more unusual. Like, so me and my nearest brother are very similar ideologically.
Yeah.
And very different to our parents. So that feels okay, because that feels quite normal, if you know what I mean. Like,
yeah, you're supposed to rail against.
Yeah, you're meant to rail against like the older, you know, the older ideas, and in turn, my kids will think that I'm awful.
And God, mum, oh,
using
God,
all
mum.
The wrong words. but yeah, I think when it's siblings, that's a bit more awkward. It feels perhaps a bit more intentional. Like, I'm not going to go that way. But then if your sisters are fascists, then it is going to be intentional, isn't it? It is going to drive you quite far the other way.
Yes, I think Diana and Oswald got arrested just when war broke out. They didn't go, oh, actually, now that war has broken out, we disagree with him, or we think some of the ideas have gone too far. They were just fully with it. I wonder if, like, sibling rivalry is, you know, prevalent with Prince Harry's book coming out, kind of going, you wouldn't believe it. Like, we were fighting and wrestling. And I was like, I can believe it. You are brothers.
That's quite normal.
It's quite normal. So there's always going to be some jostling for position. And Harry's in a family where the jostling for the position can never really happen, because the position is taken. You're either next in line to the throne or you're not. So then all the other fights have to be about, if I can't have that, maybe I've got to win the scrap in the kitchen, or, you know, and how gracious do you expect your sibling to be?
I overheard one of those royal commentators, you know, the guys that just, what is their job? Who just live to go on the radio and say what?
Talk about how
marvellous the Queen was and everything, and how devoted William and Kate are to the cause. And he was commenting on all the Harry, one of the many Harry revelations of the last few months. And he said, is there any sight worse in this world than that of two brothers fighting? And he was like, yeah, nearly all things. Like, two brothers fighting is really normal. And even if it's bad, like war, genocide,
yeah,
a tsunami. Like, I think there's loads of worse things than two brothers fighting.
Have you not heard of the Bible, mate? I'm going to assume you've heard of the Bible.
Plague of locusts.
But Cain and Abel were like, that's a tale as old as time, right?
Yeah,
is two brothers to be fighting. Like, the idea that this is shocking and that it shouldn't be shared because, you know, brothers don't do that. Of course they do.
If I had two sons and they didn't fight ever in their life, I would be concerned.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's no sight worse in this world. Oh, those people are amazing.
And also, I imagine those are the same sort of people that went, if you've got any interest in celebrity culture, like, what are you doing? And you're like, but how is this any different? You're obsessed with a family that aren't yours, and knowing the minutiae and the details, you might as well be watching Keeping Up with the Kardashians.
I mean, talk about sibling rivalry. That's a whole other episode.
Yes, on its own. Thank you for coming on the podcast, Rachel. You've been an excellent guest.
Thank you.
Before you go, I just wanted to check if there's anything you wanted to plug, because I know you have a book out.
I do. I have a book out and it's coming out in its paperback form on March 23rd. It's called Advice from Strangers. And if you haven't bought it already, then you can buy it now cheaper than it was before. So, it's in all good bookshops.
And check out where Rachel is playing live on your Instagram, Twitter or website. Where's the best place to get you?
Probably on Twitter or Instagram, yeah, which is at Rachel Paris or at Rachel SP Paris.
And you can go on and tell her which way north is.
Yes, please.
I hope this doesn't invite more trolls. That's all I'm saying. I'm on tour, so go check my website, tiffstevenson.co.uk. Thanks for listening. Cheers. Thank you, Rachel.
Thank you.
You can listen to other programmes from The Bugle, including The Bugle, Catharsis, Tiny Revolutions, Top Stories and The Gargle, wherever you find your podcasts.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince, they exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.